Hello, baseball fans, and welcome back to a special Monday edition of the MLB Daily Dish podcast, the Roster Pictorial. As always, I'm your host, Chris Schubert, and my co-host this week is one of my two normal co-hosts. You can find him at The Original Bull on Twitter, Matt Goldman. Matt, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. This is a special Monday edition, mainly because our original Thursday recording date did not go very well. So we are here today recording this on Sunday, and we have some news to get to and some things that we talked about in the last show that are actually now changed. So kind of glad that we're able to do this. So the first two things that we wanted to get to this week are some trades that happened, and one of which came from a Twitter question that we got last week about the Blue Jays, and they acquired Jesse Chavez from the A's in exchange from Liam Hendricks. And Matt, as soon as they signed, the A's, I'm talking, signed Rich Hill, the rumors surrounding Jesse Chavez really picked up, and we thought that he could be moved relatively soon because a lot of teams had interest in him, and it didn't take very long. The Blue Jays, you know, came in, offered a one-for-one deal, Liam Hendricks for Jesse Chavez, and the deal is done. So your thoughts?
It's definitely, I really like this trade for the A's if I had to pick a winner now. Chavez is going to be a free agent at the end of next year, and while he's not a top-line starter like Greinke or Cueto this offseason, with the market being a lot more shallow for the 2016-2017 free agents, Jesse Chavez will be one of the, I guess by default, one of the more interesting guys out on the market. So Billy Beane recognized that, obviously, and just being in Oakland in general, he's not got a great shot to re-sign any free agents. So getting rid of Chavez, who had 1 year left of control, for Liam Hendricks, who developed into a real frontline reliever last year, who still got 4 years of control, I believe, is a real great move for Oakland. You know, with the pieces that they have to play and kind of the market that they operate in.
4 years of control, and he's only 26. So I mean, even if you only keep him for those 4 years, you know, you have him until he's 30. You're going to get a lot of his peak years out of him. And like you said, he was a really good reliever for bullpen for Toronto last year out of the bullpen. A 2.92 ERA for them. So he's really going to slot right in there and really help them out. I just wonder now, is this the only thing we're going to see from the Blue Jays? And I know I'm kind of wargaming here and spitballing, but they still probably are going to at least talk to some big-name free agent pitcher, right?
Yeah, I still think they need to get one more, or I guess not one more, but they need to go out and sign a free agent pitcher, not necessarily Price or Greinke or Cueto, not necessarily, you know, one of the top three guys, but maybe like a top tier type, like a Zimmerman, who's more of like a 1B to Greinke and Cueto's 1A, or maybe someone like Mike Leake, who's not going to cost you a whole lot of money. There are a lot of options on the market this year. They could go after someone like Scott Kazmir or J.A. Happ, but with how their starting pitching and their bullpen in general kind of played out in the playoffs last year, they definitely need another starter. Jesse Chavez is definitely a good start, but that can't be the end of things for them.
We talked about this in what is now the second lost episode of the show. On Thursday, we talked about how we thought, and this was before they got Chavez, that we thought that the Blue Jays would probably not be able to be in the market for a Price or a Cueto or a Greinke, but like you said, that those 1B type pitchers, the Leakes and the Zimmermans of the world, and even maybe a Jeff Samardzija. So I don't think this move really changes what they're going to do. I think, you know, he adds depth to their rotation, but I still think they have the payroll flexibility and the want to go out and get another starting pitcher. But like I said, that's not the only trade we had this week. We also had the Tigers, I would want to call this a surprise, acquiring Cameron Maben in exchange for lefties Ian Kroll and Gabe Spire from the Tigers. They dumped Cameron Maben, and I think they paid, Matt, what did you say, $2.5 million of Maben's salary this year to the Tigers?
Yeah, if I read that correctly, the Braves should be covering $2.5 million for the 2016 season.
So Maben is going to come in, and I wonder where they're going to use him. The Tigers, if you looked at their depth charts before this trade, you know, J.D. Martinez is probably your right fielder. Anthony Gose is probably your center fielder. And Tyler Collins would probably be in left field. So I guess maybe Maben comes in and platoons with Gose. I don't know if that's what they're going to do. But, Matt, you were a little surprised about this trade, right?
Yeah, mainly I was surprised just because after I saw it and looked at the stats for Mabin and Ian Kroll and Gabe Spire, mainly Spire, which I'll get to in a second, it was just kind of like, what was the point of this trade? It doesn't really help the Tigers all too much. Cameron Mabin is far beyond his most valuable years unless he has a dramatic turnaround. He's not a good fielder anymore. By several advanced metrics, he was just awful. By DRS, he cost the Braves 16 runs last year on his own, which is Hanley Ramirez levels of inefficiency in the outfield. And Gabe Spire is a really, really interesting prospect. He's only 20 years old. He's about to turn 21 in 4 months. He hasn't made it above A ball, but in 77 professional innings between the Red Sox and the Tigers, he has yet to allow a home run. His highest ERA and highest FIP are 2.86 and 2.65 respectively. Now, if they'd given up Gabe Spire for, say, you know, a more impact type player, I'm not sure who that would be, but just theoretically someone maybe that's under control for a couple years, maybe three, obviously Spire on his own isn't enough of a prospect to fetch that type of major league player back. But Cameron Mabin is an overpaid outfielder. He's near the, I don't want to say he's near the end of his career, but he's, you know, he's not valuable anymore. And it kind of makes me wonder why they would give up a prospect when you could go out and get someone like Rajay Davis, who has been playing for the Tigers for 2 years. Obviously, it's more complicated than saying, let's just go sign Rajay Davis. He's going to have other suitors. But by WRC Plus, he's been an above average hitter the last 2 years. He flashed a surprising amount of power last year. According to his ISO, it jumped up to 182. So I just think there were far better options out there for the Tigers. And like you said, Mabin may wind up being a platoon guy. He's not very good against lefties, or sorry, righties rather. Ghost was atrocious versus lefties, so I could see there being a platoon in center field between those two guys if that's the route that they choose to go with.
And even if they do that with Mabin, I still think that they have a spot open in the outfield if they want to go out and get a big bat. But I think you hit the nail on the head that Spire's the interesting part of this, because you'd think that maybe if you were going to move him, like you said, you'd try to get a guy that has some years under control. And I'm spitballing here again. Just tell me if you disagree. But maybe a guy like Carlos Gonzalez or Corey Dickerson from the Rockies. I mean, those are the type of names that you might be able to use Spire as a key part of a deal that if you wanted to get some type of impact bat. But yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting. I mean, even if Mabin has a decent year, I don't think this is the greatest trade in the world. And Matt, you wrote this article for the site, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, you closed the piece really well where you said this won't cripple their future with the trade, but it's just a move that you sit back and you think, I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, wouldn't you rather, you know what you're going to get with Cameron Mabin. It's not going to be good unless, you know, they've identified some mechanical issue that they're very confident in fixing, much like the Tigers seemingly were with JD Martinez. I wrote an article for Beyond the Box Score how he changed his swing entirely between Houston and Detroit, which made him into this monster. But, you know, unless they have something like that on Mabin, it's just kind of like, why give up someone who you know what you're going to get when you could potentially have, you know, a shutdown reliever in Spire? Wouldn't you rather have 7 potential years of a guy like Spire instead of 1, maybe 2, probably below average years from Mabin?
Yeah, and I think, you know, we got to give credit where credit's due. The Braves have done really well here in getting, you know, anything of value for Cameron Mabin when it seemed impossible, or many people thought it would be impossible to trade them. And while, you know, people have gotten on them for, you know, their deal of trading Simmons and, you know, potentially listing on Freeman, they've done a good job with, you know, tinkering with their roster and maybe getting pieces for the future as they open up that new stadium in a couple of years.
Yeah, the Braves, obviously, when you talk about prospect systems, usually the conversation is between Boston, Houston, and Chicago is who's the most star-studded down in the minor leagues. And I want to say Houston, every single one of their minor league teams made the playoffs this year. They won the minor league organization of the year. But the Braves are definitely trending towards that direction. A lot of their trades have been to just acquire as much possible talent as they can. And eventually they'll start to, you know, work that into their major league roster around, hopefully, Freddie Freeman will still be there. And, you know, some other guys that are coming up through the system.
Yeah, I think they're on the right track, and they're doing the things that they need to do this winter to get them to that level of the Cubs, Astros, and the Red Sox. All right, so let's switch gears here, Matt, and talk about probably the biggest name left in the closer trade market, and that has to be Aroldis Chapman. Craig Kimbrell got traded from the Padres to the Red Sox. His name's off the board. You got Chapman, you got Ken Giles, and Andrew Miller are really the big three left. And Chapman's the top prize. I mean, he's only got 1 year of control left. He's getting paid probably about $12, $13 million this year based on arbitration projections. And the Reds have put a self-imposed deadline on moving Aroldis Chapman. And when we recorded the show on Thursday, I talked about how much this surprised me. And having a couple more days to think about it, it's still as surprising as it was then that they would put this self-imposed deadline on themselves to move Chapman before the winter meeting start on December 7th.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of odd to have a self-imposed deadline, and I remember we talked about this idea that maybe Walt Jocketty is kind of trying to create his own deadline, much of the way that the July trade deadline exists. That by putting kind of this final date on it, maybe this is complete speculation. I have no sources on this, but I could see an artificial deadline creating some tension potentially for the front offices, saying we have to get a deal together by this date. Let's go the extra mile just to ensure we get Chapman, because like you said, there aren't that many high profile closers left on the market. Francisco Rodriguez got traded to Detroit. Miller is potentially out there from what Cashman has said, but with the contract that he has, that's going to take one hell of a package to get, and the Phillies don't seem to be motivated to move Ken Giles, because while they're going through a rebuilding phase, he's going to be there. Having a back end bullpen piece like Giles is a very hot commodity, and if they do want to move him, they would, ask for a king's ransom. Craig Kimbrel brought back four prospects for fewer years of control and for more money owed. So you start to wonder what the Phillies could potentially get for a guy like Giles if there's someone out there that's willing to overpay. But for closers that we know are available, Chapman is definitely the cream of the crop. But with the 1 year of control remaining, he's not going to fetch a prospect package like Kimbrel did. But the Reds should probably, if I had to guess, would be looking for probably, two top prospects to bring back, maybe a third lower level guy that's more of a high risk or a low ceiling, but you know what you're going to get from him.
I wonder how much of this is also maybe them panicking that the teams that they thought that they could trade with the most, maybe the Red Sox, the Tigers, have went out and got their guys, and Chapman and the Reds are still there. The Tigers got K-Rod, the Padres traded Kimbrel to the Red Sox. So the suitors for Chapman and the big-name teams that the Reds could get prospects from are coming off the board, and you just look at the teams that have been rumored to get Chapman. The Astros, Yankees, Diamondbacks, Blue Jays, and Nationals are the teams that are left. The Nationals have interest in Darren O'Day now. That interest has picked up, so maybe they're looking to go the free agent market instead of going for a trade. The Yankees, they're potentially moving Andrew Miller, so unless they change their mind on that, I don't know how much they would be willing to give up for Chapman. We know the Astros are, I believe the quote was, hell-bent on getting a closer this winter, so maybe the Reds and Astros have a fit. But for me, it's still the Diamondbacks at the end of the day. That was the team that talked to the Reds back in July about Chapman. They're still around now. They're seriously discussing bringing in Johnny Cueto. If they could get Cueto and Chapman in together, I think maybe if they were able to trade for Chapman, that could be a selling point to Cueto. I think that they're probably the favorite at this point of the teams that are still left. But the Astros have the biggest prospect system, and if they really want to flex their muscles and go out and get Chapman, they can. But Matt, I said this during the week, and I want to get your thoughts on it again. I wonder if this self-imposed deadline is because the Reds have other pieces that they want to move, like a Jay Bruce or a Brandon Phillips. And Chapman, they know, is their easiest asset to move. So if they move him now, that can allow them to focus on the legwork that's going to need to be done to trade Bruce Phillips. And if they go for a full rebuild, guys like Joey Votto and Todd Frazier.
Yeah, of those guys, obviously Chapman is the most easily movable with a 1 year contract or 1 year remaining left on his contract. Phillips and Bruce are definitely going to be more difficult. Phillips, because he has the no trade, or not necessarily a no trade clause, but he has 10-5 rights, I believe.
Well, and Bruce has an 18 no trade clause.
Right. As well. So that came out today. So now we have eight teams that we know would be more difficult to trade him to. Votto, I can't see being moved just because of how much money is on that deal, despite him still being an extremely valuable player, and it would be a key piece to any team that would acquire him. They a team would have to essentially empty their farm system to get a guy like Votto. But I do agree with that. Getting Chapman out of the way first, using your biggest bullet, they can get a couple of top prospects back potentially, and then know what they need to work with in Phillips deals or Bruce deals, potentially a Frazier deal, to kind of help jumpstart their rebuilding phase.
Now, obviously, if they don't move him before December 7th, that's not going to mean that the Reds shut down all talks on Chapman. I just think from a philosophy standpoint, they want to move him first to be able to take on the projects they're going to be trading Bruce and Phillips, because like you said, the no trade clauses, the money involved with both of these guys, it's not going to be easy to get a team to just be like, okay, we'll take those on. I mean, there's going to have to be scouting of prospects. There's going to be a lot of dialogue and conversation that's going to need to take place. And if the Reds have to balance those talks with Chapman talks, it may become a little difficult and in the middle of that, other teams are trying to sign guys, and that could influence your trade market. So trying to get a guy like Chapman moved now is probably for the best. But we want to move on. Pitching is very important in baseball, and this winter especially, with all the big names that are on the board. And Matt, this one hits home for you, as Zach Greinke could be going to the Giants, as they are seen as a, quote, big threat to sign Zach Greinke.
Yeah, I believe that report was from John Heyman, that he's spoken to a couple people that not only believe that the Giants are a serious threat, but those people might even go as far to say that they're potentially a favorite to land Greinke. And since the John Lester failed sweepstakes, I'm always a little hesitant to jump into the, yeah, we're the favorite to land anyone type, because at the end of the day, until that contract is signed, that's all just speculation. The Giants were supposed to be a front runner for Lester, but then the Cubs just blew him away. So Greinke going to the Giants, while it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility, in my opinion, I think what it'll really come down to is what the Dodgers want to do, because if they want to bring back Greinke and they're dead set on making sure he's behind Kershaw for the next 5-6 years, they're going to be able to do it, because no one can compete with the pockets that they've got. The Giants obviously aren't a small market team, but they are almost infinitely more limited in terms of what they can afford than what the Dodgers can. And there was a report that the Giants might be looking to bring in two starting pitchers rather than just one big name free agent. So I know I can't remember if I've put this down in words, but since the offseason started, I've been wondering if they might just try and go in quickly and bring back Leake, and then go out and get someone like Jordan Zimmermann, who is still in that top tier of pitchers, but isn't a Cueto, Greinke, or a Price. He's not going to cost upwards of $140, $150 million. I feel like Zimmermann will be closer to the $100 million mark than those three aforementioned pitchers. And, the Giants don't need to go out and get a guy that's going to be around for 6 years. What Greinke might be looking for with a huge AAV coming off what could have been a Cy Young season.
Well, I was actually going to ask you about this, because I remember after the Giants traded for Leake, there was a lot of discussion that Leake wanted to stay, that both parties were interested in a reunion for this year. And then all of a sudden, this Greinke talk has picked up steam, and I just wonder if they signed Greinke, if that would limit their ability to sign Leake. And I think it may be more of, like you said, that they may try to get two pitchers, and maybe instead of throwing the big bullet at a guy like Greinke, they get Leake and Zimmermann, gives them more depth. I mean, they don't have the talent of Zach Greinke, but Leake and Zimmermann are two very good pitchers. You put them behind Bumgarner, and you got a really formidable top three starting pitchers in that division, and that's going to be huge.
Yeah, and I've always been of the opinion or the side of the argument that it would be better to spend, say, if the Giants were to go out and get Leake and Zimmermann, and it costs something like $40 million more than to just sign Greinke, I think that's a more fiscally intelligent move, because Greinke could only throw 200 some odd innings in the regular season. Leake and Zimmermann would be able to cover you 400 in a best case scenario. Greinke's a one every fifth day player, obviously being a starting pitcher, and with the Giants rotation last year kind of falling apart more than once over the course of a season, and not knowing what Chris Heston is going to be able to do in 2016, because he faltered down the stretch, and he'd never been in the major leagues before last year, and then Jake Peavy's getting up there in age. I know he was really great once he was healthy last year. But I think for what the Giants need going forward, you know, not just 2016 but beyond, they need pitching for the long haul while their prospects get some time to figure things out in the minor leagues.
Well, another thing that came to mind for me was if they sign Greinke and they pay him, you know, upwards of $200 million, probably even more than that, does that impact their ability to sign Madison Bumgarner to a long-term extension?
I would probably say no, just because Bumgarner is one of the weirdest players I've, you know, had the privilege of watching. I remember someone, it might have been this year, someone asked him if he was regretting signing that $40 million contract in 2012. I think with option years, it could kick it up to 60 some odd million. But he said something along the lines of, to this reporter, you know, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with $40 million. I've never had this much money in my life. I never thought I would ever have this much money. So to ask if I'm bitter or jealous of these guys who are signing $150 million contracts, just it doesn't fit my lifestyle. You know, he lives in the same town that he grew up, which is affectionately referred to as Bumtown because of how many relatives of the Bumgarner family occupy that city, or not even city, it's really a town. And He in the off season, he goes out into his farm. He takes care of his cows and his horses, chops down some trees. So I think him in San Francisco for the long haul is a definite possibility, more so than a possibility, in my opinion. I think it's a likelihood, especially with the fact that Crawford is now around for another 6 years. Posey is around for another 6 years. And by all, you know, appearances, he, you know, there's no reason for him to leave.
Right. Well, the only reason why I brought it up was because if they pay the money to Greinke and it comes time for him to get an extension and they just don't have the money, or there's too many movable parts, that maybe they're better pressed to save the money now, sign a Leak and a Zimmerman so they can have that money later on. So I thought maybe that would factor into their decision a little bit. But if what you said is accurate, then he's probably going to be there for life as a Giant.
Yeah, and I don't think the Giants would. You know, with the way that their front office has been for the past 10 years and the way it's still set up generally with the same people, I don't think that they would make a move that would, you know, drastically hurt their chances at retaining a guy like Bumgarner, who not only who's become one of the all-time great Giants pitchers, you know, very quickly, but he's a fan favorite. And so I don't think they would do anything seriously to jeopardize their chances of making sure that he's around for the very long haul.
Right. Okay. Well, Matt, this is the second time we're doing this in a week, but it's actually the first time on the show that we're going to do Twitter questions. So if you have those up and ready, just throw them out there and we can start talking about these teams and the people's
questions. Right. So the first question was if we could discuss whether or not the Diamondbacks will trade for a frontline starter. And we got that question, I want to say, probably 3-4 days ago now.
Before the Shelby Miller news, right?
Right, so that's, you know, kind of what I was going to talk about is the fact that they're definitely interested, or at least they appear to be interested, in doing their background research on starting pitchers that might be available. And Shelby Miller came up. He appears to be a hot NL West trade piece. The Dodgers and Giants apparently checked on him too. So the Diamondbacks, they seem like they from, you know, the players that they're checking out, Chapman, Cueto, Shelby Miller. It seems that they're ready to make that next step. Whether or not that they'll be able to compete in the trade market against teams like the Giants or the Dodgers is another question. Their farm system isn't incredibly deep, and a team like the Diamondbacks, you know, they want to hold on to their homegrown prospects because they're not a big market team and they can't really compete in the free agent market every year like the Yankees, Red Sox, or Dodgers can.
So I'm going to answer this question in two parts. To the part that if they're going to go out and trade for a starting pitcher, I would lean on the side of no, but with a caveat that it's not going to be a big name. I don't think they're going to be able to, you know, trade for a huge frontline pitcher. Like, let's say David Price was with a team. They don't have the prospect system to trade for a David Price level. But what they can do, and what I think that we saw by them exploring a Shelby Miller trade, is that they're willing to add depth and get maybe number two, number three ceiling pitchers and then sign that big number one pitcher. So I think, you know, Carlos Carrasco in Cleveland is a potential fit. I know there's no rumors linked to them at this point, but I wouldn't be surprised to see them get into those sweepstakes. We saw them with Shelby Miller. Another name and this may come off as being a homer, but Zach Wheeler of the Mets is the type, is maybe the type of guy that they may want to look for to build from with the trade, because they don't have, you know, the prospect system of the Cubs that they can empty for a big name starting pitcher. But like we saw with the news that they are, you know, interested in seriously considering signing Cueto, that they are going to go out and try to get a big name pitcher through the free agent market, and they're willing to spend the dollars that way. So I think what you're seeing, if you're a Diamondbacks fan, is that there is a willingness and a want to get better starting pitching wise and get that big end talent, but they realize that their prospect system isn't deep enough to go out and get a big name guy. So they're probably going to have to float the dollars out there and do the legwork on the back end to get a number two, number three guy through the trade market. All right, Matt, next question, as I try to breathe after that answer.
The last question we got, which was, you know, tailor-made for Bates on the last episode, was whether or not the Twins will deal Trevor Plouffe. And if I'm remembering our conversation correctly, I think his answer was leaning on the side of no, that they won't, that if he had to put a percentage on it, it would have been about 45% likelihood that they hold on, or sorry, that they don't trade Trevor Plouffe.
Yeah, I think his big sticking point was that they can trade Trevor Plouffe. They have the ability to move him around, and it's going to depend on how good Miguel Sano is and, you know, what happens with the negotiations with Byung-ho Park, because all of that stuff is going to play into the puzzle piece that is the Twins roster for next year. And he admitted that, you know, Plouffe has value as a, you know, right-handed third baseman, and he can get something back in the trade market for that, and there's value with the two best free agent third basemen being David Freese and Juan Uribe. So if the Twins do decide that they want to move Trevor Plouffe, they do have a leg up on the free agent options, as they have one of the higher valued targets this winter.
Yeah, and I think the thing that we have to keep in mind for the Twins specifically is that they made, you know, a huge leap last year that I don't think many people were expecting to see them make. They were challenging for that second wild card spot, you know, till the end of September. And so while Plouffe is, you know, definitely a solid trade candidate, you just have to think that the Twins aren't going to want to take a huge step back. And if they don't have a replacement ready for Plouffe, they would need to make sure that they got, you know, a hell of a return package so that they don't set back their, you know, their playoff ETA by a couple of years after they made such great strides last year.
Yeah, and they're only gonna move them if they get blown away, and it's something that can allow them to compete now and in the future. They're not gonna sacrifice any of their short-term success because of how well that they made a jump last year. So I think that's gonna do it for all of our Twitter questions this week, and it's gonna do it for the show. But as always, if you have Twitter questions for us, and if you want us to talk about something that we missed, you can tweet us at MLB Daily Dish. Tweet Matt at The Original Bull. Tweet me at Chris R. Schubert. We'll probably throw out tweets during the week right before we record the show this week about what you guys want us to talk about in this segment. So, you know, you send us a question, more than likely it will get answered on the show. As always, like the show on, or subscribe, I like, it's like a Facebook thing. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, give it a rating, share it with all of your friends, leave comments. We want your feedback. We want this to be just as much as a conversation with you as it is between the two or three of us every week. So that's going to do it for us this week on this short Monday edition of the Roster Rhetorical MLB Daily Dish podcast. Matt, we are going to come back for a Thursday edition this week. Is that right? Or Wednesday maybe, because it's Thanksgiving?
Yes, we will definitely be having a regularly scheduled program this week.
We'll call it the holiday edition because it is Thanksgiving this week. So maybe we'll talk a little turkey as well, maybe. Try to sneak that into our conversation, if that's all right with you.
I think that's doable. We could have a little turkey talk.
Yeah, we'll make sure Mike is okay with that, because he's just as important to the show as the two of us are. So, all right, guys, thank you for joining us, and we will see you guys not next week, as I normally say at the end of the show, but we will see you guys in a couple of days for our regularly scheduled edition. So we will see you guys later in the week.